Support for WPR comes from Tom and Margaret Deal, proprietors of the Tommy Bartlett Ski, Sky, and Stage Show, and the Tommy Bartlett Exploratory Interactive Science Center, Wisconsin Dells. Proud to sponsor Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from The Bolt Company, providing professional construction services to customers in a variety of markets nationwide for more than 125 years. More about markets served, featured projects, and news is at bolt.com. Support also comes from Prevea 360 Health Plan, providing physician-led insurance coverage and health care for businesses and families in Northeast Wisconsin and the Lakeshore. Online at Prevea360.com, centered around you. Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Dells, indoor water parks and theme parks, entertainment and boat tours. More is at wisdells.com and on the Wisdells to Go app. Wisconsin Dells, the water park capital of the world.
Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg this week. We continue our series of candidate forums leading up to the November 8th election. Wisconsin's 24th Senate District covers all of Portage County and parts of Wood, Adams, Juneau, Jackson, Monroe, and Washerin counties. UW-Stevens Point and Fort McCoy fall within its boundaries. Since 2003, Democrat Julie Lassa has held the seat. Her challenger Patrick Teston chairs the Republican Party of Portage County. We talk with both candidates today. Due to scheduling conflicts, neither of them is able to join us live. However, their comments were recorded in separate interviews earlier this week. While we won't be taking any calls, you are welcome to comment on the Route 51 Facebook page at Route 51 Show. You will first hear from Republican Patrick Teston. Pat Teston, welcome to the program.
Great to be on.
Why do you want to represent the 24th Senate District, and what qualifies you for the job?
Well, Rick, I announced my candidacy back in January, and since January, I've had the opportunity to crisscross the 24th Senate District, going door to door, attending different events and parades to hear what people have to say. And I kept hearing over and over again that people are hungry. They're hungry for fresh ideas, new perspectives, and real leadership. And that after 18 years of the same representation, that they're looking for something different. They want a senator who's not going to run from a challenge. And I believe my experience as a sales representative gives me a keen insight into what our small businesses are facing and what we can do better as a state to make our economy stronger and attract new opportunities to the state of Wisconsin.
You've put a major emphasis on higher education reform. And you say you're concerned with the cost of higher education. In fact, your plan, the Wisconsin Education Achievement Initiative, which is available on your website, details a five-step approach you would pursue if elected. And those five steps are: limit the number of general education requirements, change staff dynamics in the UW system, link tuition increases to the consumer price index, increase competition through better education, and offer refinancing options to fiscally responsible students. Now, we don't have time to go over all five of those, but I'd like to take a few moments on the first one. You propose limiting the number of general education requirements needed to graduate from a four-year UW system school. Would you expand on that?
Absolutely. So when we were in the process of putting this plan together, I drew on a lot of my personal experiences at my time at UWSP. Mm-hmm. And I was a political science major. And for the life of me, I could never figure out why I was taking courses that didn't necessarily pertain to my major. I mean, I actually had to take a course on how to ride a bicycle, when that's a skill I mastered when I was 5 years old. So what I'd like to see done is that we create more fast-track programs for students that want to get through the door quicker and faster and into the job market sooner. But for those students who may not know what path they want, that they still have that traditional liberal arts experience available to them. And that we're also making sure that students have more opportunities to have more degrees that pertain to their majors, so that we're actually giving them more skills and resources for them to be successful in their chosen field.
Well, recently, within the past 3 years, UW-Stevens Point revamped their general education requirements. Now, what they've done is reduce the number of credits and diversifying the class selections. And because of cut in state funding and a tuition freeze, it was difficult to offer as many classes as planned, and the purpose of liberal arts education, as you know, is to provide a well-rounded education while developing the necessary critical thinking and communication skills to thrive in our global society. Now, if public universities cut these requirements, how would they differ from trade and technical schools, from your perspective?
Well, you mentioned the UWSP reform and the general degree requirements, and I think UWSP is a great example of that, and scaling back some of those courses and making sure that we're focusing on areas that we need to focus on, especially in areas like STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to budget cuts, too, when you look at some of the shortfalls, I believe UWSP is currently at 13% funding from the state. I give Chancellor Bernie Patterson a lot of credit. He's actually, from his experience as a chancellor at a private university coming to a public institution, has been very resourceful. You look at UWSP, they just partnered with Century Insurance for a $4 million donation to set up new programs and technology courses.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're also raising funds in a capital campaign. I believe their goal is $36 million to kind of offset some of these, any shortfalls or funding shortages from the state. But the way I look at it is we need general degree requirement to reform those. So for other universities, not necessarily UWSP, that students are getting the courses that they need, that they still have the ability to get some of those general degree requirements, but maybe not necessarily spending half their college career in those courses and focusing on courses that pertain more to their chosen major.
Mm-hmm. So some of the general ed courses right now, if I understand correctly, within this revision that UWSP has put in place, some of those courses actually can be geared toward and within those fields of students' majors, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, another pioneering effort that I've noticed actually happened in the past couple of years with UWSP is the differential tuition program that was put through, which essentially is a student-controlled tuition increase to fund these programs that are lacking. And Representative Krug from the Wisconsin Rapids area does support that. Is that something that you would support as well?
Well, I'll tell you, with my experience with differential tuition, when I was at UWSP, I was heavily involved in our Student Government Association. And when I was there for years, I was opposed to it because I was never sure if it was put in place, if it would go away, or if it was actually going to be used for what it was intended for. But during the course of the last budget, I had the opportunity to speak with Chancellor Patterson and even Representative Scott Krug and about the need for differential tuition and how they're using it to open up bottleneck courses, to have more courses available to students. So again, they're not delayed from graduation and have to take out more student loans that we can get them through the door quicker and sooner. So in this instance, if students are paying maybe $200-$300 more a year to save a couple $1,000s in tuition costs, I think that's a cost savings in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
For those students.
Well, looking at student loan debt, the U.S. Federal Reserve estimates that there's approximately 753,000 Wisconsin residents with federal student loan debt. And in 2014, Wisconsin graduates carried an average debt of $28,810 compared to $16,560 the previous decade. Your opponent, Senator Lassa, has co-authored the Higher Ed Lower Debt Bill to help ease this burden of student debt. Her bill essentially would do two things. First, it would create a Wisconsin Student Loan Refinancing Authority. And second, it would give borrowers the ability to deduct student loan interest from their taxes. It seems that you and Senator Lassa are not too far apart on this issue. In fact, it looks pretty close to your idea of offering refinancing options to fiscally responsible students. Would you support Senator Lassa's bill, or how does your plan differ from hers?
Well, in regards to the Higher Ed Lower Debt Bill, it is a refinancing option, but it doesn't tackle the root cause of the problem. I mean, the real issue is the rising cost of college tuition in the state, and not just the state, but around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I know from my experience alone, when I attended UWSP, I saw my tuition go up 5.5% every single year. And I grew up in a middle-class family where my parents didn't have a lot of disposable income, if hardly any at all. And they would have loved to have help me out more financially with college, but they just simply weren't able to. And I understand the struggles and the difficulties when students were receiving those letters, because that was one of them. When you saw that tuition increase and you're asking yourself, well, how am I going to pay for this? Am I going to take out more loans, or am I going to have to work extra hours at the factories and lumber yards back in Marinette? And so the big difference between, we both have a refinancing option that in our plan, we call for 5 years for fiscally responsible borrowers who live in the state of Wisconsin after they graduate. They have a strong and clean history of repayments. But the big difference between the higher ed lower debt bill versus my education achievement initiative is that our plan actually tackles the root cause of the problem and gets students through the door faster, into the job market sooner, with less debt. What we call for is cutting administrative costs and consolidating administrative costs 15% over 5 years. And the cost savings that we get from that we use to actually hire professors to open up bottleneck courses and actually retain some of the professors that we have right here in the UW system and to attract new professors.
Part of the Assembly GOP Forward agenda is issuing a laptop or a tablet to every incoming high school freshman. And on the surface, this would address some of your concerns, I believe, regarding the closing the skills gap. It also brings up a larger issue of the lack of reliable broadband service in the largely rural 24th district, not only for connecting those laptops and tablets, but for growing commerce as well. How would you pursue enacting legislation to address this issue?
Well, obviously, I do like that aspect of the Forward agenda put forth by the Assembly Republicans. And obviously, as you mentioned, the 24th Senate district is it's a rural district. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we have broadband in these rural areas to attract new opportunities, new businesses, and to make sure that our students have access to the internet. Because as you mentioned, that the skills gap, that's going to be a huge issue. I mean, currently right now we have over 92,000 job openings in the state of Wisconsin. And when you talk to employers all across the 24th Senate District and across the state of Wisconsin, they have a hard time finding people because they simply can't find bodies or people to fill the positions because they simply don't have the skills necessary to do those jobs. So we need to start looking at what we can do in the classroom, and I think the Forward agenda is a good start, and I'd definitely be open to pursuing more policies such as that, and obviously to increase broadband expansion in rural parts of the state, especially in central and western Wisconsin.
And how would you work with your colleagues across the aisle on an issue like this, or on any issue for that matter?
Well, excuse me, I look at it through my personal experiences. I work as a sales representative for a wine distributor company, and I work with all different types of people. And it's about building relationships. You have to have strong relationships and be willing to work with people you may not necessarily agree with all the time. But more importantly, my philosophy is that no party has a monopoly on good ideas. And if someone has a good idea for the district and for the state, it shouldn't matter if they have an R behind their name or a D behind their name. Let's get the job done. Let's do what's best for the people we represent. Let's work together to move the state forward.
Pat, the DNR is tentatively releasing its draft environmental impact statement this week for the proposed Golden Sands Dairy in the town of Saratoga. And a tentative public hearing is planned for the end of October. As you know, this is really a significant issue for the 24th Senate District. Throughout your campaign, you've said you want to eliminate job-killing rules and regulations to bring new opportunities to Wisconsin, and using the phrase modern rules for a modern economy. Your Republican colleague, Scott Krug, as we talked about earlier, has actually been calling for more regulations on concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, and advocates giving the DNR more regulatory authority in this area, especially relating to high-capacity wells. And other Republican representatives view regulating CAFOs and putting restrictions on high-capacity wells as costly and bad for Wisconsin business. Where do you stand on this issue, and how do you think we can find a balance between what is good for the environment and what is good for the local economy?
Well, it's no secret that high-capacity wells have become a hot-button issue in central Wisconsin, and rightly so. We all need access to clean groundwater. Now, whether you're a grower in an egg industry, or if you live on a lake or a private well owner, or even if you live in a municipality like Stevens Point or Wisconsin Rapids, we all use groundwater. So we need to be good stewards of that resource. But we also have to understand and be cognizant of the fact that in the Central Sands region and across the state, agriculture is a driving factor of our state's economy. Just last year alone, it was an $88 billion industry, and it makes up over 11% of our state's workforce, and that doesn't even account for the support industries that support the egg industry. Now, in regards to the proposed CAFO in Saratoga, that's why we have the environmental impact study, that they're going through the permanent process, the DNR is doing their due diligence, and if it's shown that it's going to be a detrimental impact, well, then the DNR is not going to allow them to move forward. But provided there's no issues with it, then they have every right under the law to go forward with their operation.
Do you have any other plans or any other thoughts on environmental regulations or bills that you would think about putting forward, or bills that you'd be considering signing on to that might be in the legislature now with respect to the environment?
Well, sure. This last session, there were two bills in the state Senate. There was a bill authored by Senator Coles and then Senator Gudex that unfortunately didn't pass, and both bills had some merit to them. Coles wanted to set up some special designated areas for sensitive areas in regards to our groundwater resources, and Senator Gudex's bill had some provisions in there allowing people to move their well within 100 feet of an existing well without going through the environmental impact study. There were some good things in both bills, but I think what's going to be crucial as we move forward going into the next legislative session is making sure we have all the players involved at the table, that we have members of the ag community, that we have members of our local municipalities and town governments and our lakeshore associations to come together to hash out ideas and really policies that are going to be beneficial to everyone.
Pat, veterans care is another major issue for you. From your website, you say the more we learn about issues of veterans at the VA and TOMA and across the Veterans Affairs Administration, the more we need to redouble our efforts to care for those who have served. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has made this a major issue for his reelection campaign, and Senator Lassa has called for an audit of the state veterans home at King, joined by Senator Luther Olson. What steps would you take to ensure actual change is made in care for our veterans?
Well, first off, I mean, as you mentioned, there have been a number of stories ranging from TOMA and now recently in the last couple of months in regards to the veterans home in King just outside of Waupaca. Now, anytime allegations are brought up, especially regarding veterans, you know, these are people who have put their lives on the line and put their lives on hold to put on a uniform to defend our country, to make sure that we're able to have a conversation like we're having right now. So anytime allegations are brought up, that we should look into them. And we should continue investing in our veterans and making sure that their programs are funded so they're taken care of, whether that's for job placement, grants for small businesses that hire veterans. These are all great things that we should be focusing on. And I'm glad to see that the audit committee is moving forward with the Veterans Home in King, and I look forward to seeing the conclusion of that report. And if there's anything that we can do better or differently to make sure those veterans are taken care of, we need to do it.
Transportation is a key economic development issue. According to a U.S. Department of Transportation report, Wisconsin's roads are rated third worst in the nation, with 71% of our road conditions being rated poor or mediocre. Our state has borrowed billions of dollars to maintain Wisconsin's roadways, and some Republicans have recently been calling for raising new revenues, whether from increasing the gas tax or raising fees. And Wausau and Marathon County are considering a wheel tax to deal with our infrastructure issue. Governor Walker's recently released transportation budget does not raise taxes or fees and even delays current construction projects in the state. Pat, where do you begin to find a long-term solution for this?
Well, transportation is another one of those issues that we keep hearing more and more about, and it's making headlines, and rightly so. If we're going to have a strong economy, we need to have a strong infrastructure in place to make that happen. Now, there have been a lot of ideas thrown out over the last few months, and it's important to know before we make any definitive decisions, it's important for people to understand that currently the Joint Finance Committee is conducting an audit of the Department of Transportation, and we should have the results of that by the end of this year. And just like any family out there, when they're in the process of maybe doing an addition onto their home or doing a major project or remodel, You want to know what type of numbers, what type of budget you're going to be working with. So before we make any decisions or any considerations of raising gas tax or wheel taxes, we need to know what we're working with for the audit and for the audit to be completed. But there is one thing I can tell you from talking to folks across the 24th Senate District in central and western Wisconsin is that there is a growing frustration because for years they have seen their tax dollars get funneled down to these massive projects in the southeastern part of the state. Even some of our town chairmen in the 24th Senate District have talked to me about some of the issues that they're facing. These are townships that maybe have a population base of 200 or less and upwards of 80 miles of roads that they have to take care of. And for them to get one new mile of road, it costs them almost $200,000. They just don't have the tax base to do that. And so what I'd like to see happen in the next state budget is that we have more state aid to go to our rural communities, to fix our rural roads and make sure that we're bringing up our infrastructure in central and western Wisconsin up to par.
Both you and Senator Lassa are concerned about the tax burden on individuals and families. And just this year, she introduced a bill allowing for tax credits for families with dependents. On your website, as well as in your table talks with Test and Videos, you say you want to simplify our tax code. What specifically do you mean by that and propose? And if elected, how would you work with your legislative colleagues to make that happen?
Well, I can tell you, Chris, when it comes to tax reform, so I announced my candidacy back on January 6th. And as mentioned previously, I've had the opportunity to go out and talk to people across the district to get their thoughts and ideas. And this may surprise you, but not once has someone come up to me and said, you know what, Pat, I am paying my fair share of taxes. Can you help us find more ways to send our money down to Madison? Far too often, I'm hearing the exact opposite. Whether it's our small business owners, whether it's our hardworking families, whether it's our seniors, that we're overtaxed, we're overregulated. And I think there are some common sense measures that we can take a look at. You look over the last 6 years, people making between $20,000 and $50,000 have seen their state income taxes go down 38%, but I think we can do better. Just from what I've heard from people, we need to do better. And in the last couple sessions, they reformed our state income tax code going from 4 brackets to 3. And I'd like to see if it's possible to give people more tax relief. But also when we take a look at our business climate, taking a look at our state corporate income tax, our state corporate income tax is 7.9%. Now, that's the third highest in the Midwest and one of the highest in the country. So right out of the gate, we put Wisconsin at an economic disadvantage. So I'd like to see us be more in line with some other states like Michigan and Indiana so we can attract new businesses and new opportunities to the state of Wisconsin and expand our tax base.
Patrick, what do you want people to know about yourself?
For people who haven't met me,
yeah.
I grew up in a middle-class family, and my parents instilled in me that if I was going to get ahead in life, I'd have to work hard. And so I got my first job bussing tables before I even had my driver's license. All through high school and college, I worked in various jobs, working in factories, lumber yards, and loader docks to help pay for my education. And today, I share many of the challenges that the people of 24th face, whether it's paying back student loans or a mortgage or car payments or, in my case, saving up money for a wedding next August. I understand the issues that are facing the people of 24th Senate District because I'm one of them. And I think we can work together. We can move our state forward if we roll up our sleeves and tackle the challenges and the issues that we face head on. Now, one of the reasons I entered this race, Rick, back in January, is when I looked around and looked back on how fortunate I've been to live and work in a state that's given me every opportunity to be successful. Well, when the time comes for my fiance and I to get married and have a family of our own, I want to make sure that our children have the same opportunities and better opportunities than we had growing up, but not just for our kids. I want that for all the people of the 24th Senate District and the state of Wisconsin. And that's why I'm in this race, and that's why I'm asking people for their support and their vote on November 8th.
Patrick Teston, thank you so much for being on Route 51 today.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be on.
You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be back with Senator Julie Lassa right after this break.
Support for WPR comes from Peninsula Players in Door County, presenting Patrick Barlow's comic interpretation of Alfred Hitchcock's adventure thriller, The 39 Steps, now through October 16th. Tickets are at peninsulaplayers.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Democrat incumbent Julie Lassa grew up on a dairy farm in Portage County, graduated from Stevens Point Area Senior High and UW-Stevens Point. After college and during her time as executive director of the Plover Area Business Association, she served on the Town of Dewey Board of Supervisors. From 1998 to 2003, Julie represented District 71 in the State Assembly when she was elected state senator in 2003. Senator Lassa is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Economic Development and Commerce Committee and the Revenue, Financial Institutions, and Rural Issues Committee. She also serves on the Workforce Development, Public Works, and Military Affairs Committee. The senator also serves on the Children's Trust Fund and on the Board of Directors for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Senator Julie Lassa, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Why do you want to represent the 24th District?
Well, I am proud to serve as the state senator for the 24th Senate District right now, and it has really been an honor to represent my constituents in the state Senate. I'm very proud of the fact that I have worked in a bipartisan manner, and I've really focused on economic development and job creation because of my experience working for the Business Association, keeping our promise to our veterans, protecting our children and families, and really increasing government accountability and transparency. In the state Senate, I've been independent, I've been effective, and have been willing to work across the aisle to get things done. In fact, even with there being so much partisanship in the legislature right now, this last session I was able to get 15 bills passed the legislature and signed into law, ranging from help to local communities for economic development and job creation to extending the statute of limitations for certain sexual assaults. So I have been really proud of the fact that my Republican colleagues often seek me out to come up with common sense solutions to a number of challenges facing our state.
Senator, you sit on the board of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Both you and Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca have been critical of WEDEC and have called for it to close down, saying it's irretrievably broken. Can you expand on what you believe the role of WEDEC is and your role on that board?
Sure. Well, WEDEC was created by Governor Walker, and that was passed by the Republican majority in the legislature in order to take the place of the Department of Commerce. And from the very beginning, it has had a number of problems because there wasn't enough thought, I believe, into making sure that it was created in such a way where it could function adequately, creating the good-paying, family-supporting jobs that we so desperately need in the state of Wisconsin, as well as being accountable and transparent to taxpayers. So we've really focused on working with Governor Walker as well as with other board members to make sure that the agency is accountable and transparent, and that the awards that are being given to companies here in the state are not being used to outsource jobs outside of the state of Wisconsin, and that we're creating quality jobs for the hardworking men and women of the state.
Now, you mentioned outsourcing jobs, and one of the economic development issues that you dealt with, a real-life issue here in the district, had to do with Skyward. And not only were we looking at outsourcing jobs, but potentially outsourcing or the company leaving the state altogether and moving to Texas. Tell us about that experience and what role you played in that.
Sure. Well, it was a two-year struggle that really shouldn't have occurred, because what had originally happened is there was a proposal within the governor's budget back a number of years ago that said they wanted school districts to use one vendor or one company to sell student information system software. And in the end, that contract was given to a Minnesota company. So it would have barred Skyward from doing business with school districts here in the state, which is absolutely crazy because Skyward is a homegrown success story that started out of the King family garage and has grown now to employ hundreds of people in the Stevens Point area, mainly as well as in other parts of the country. And I cannot tell you the calls and the conversations that I had not only with the King family, but also so many of the employees and their families and neighbors and other citizens who were concerned about the possibility of Skyward being forced to leave the state because they would be barred from selling one of their most popular products with school districts here in Wisconsin. And so what we were able to do is to work jointly with Republicans and other Democratic legislators around the state to get that change. So now Skyward has, Wisconsin now has a multi-vendor system that allows Skyward to be able to compete for school district contracts with other companies, both from Wisconsin as well as from outside, and they are doing really well. If you or your listeners drive past the Stevens Point Business Park, they have a brand new headquarters. They're looking at potentially building another headquarters, and they are a real success story. And I think because we were able to work in a bipartisan manner to get state government to realize that they had made a mistake, we were able to keep Skyward here in central Wisconsin, in our state, and creating really high-quality jobs that are needed.
That was a huge example of a bipartisan success. How do you encourage, or how would you encourage, if reelected, more of that happening at the Statehouse?
Well, I think it is through example, frankly. And just this last session, a group of us got together and talked about the need for really promoting sound public policy that benefits children all across the state, because we've seen where one in five children now, I believe, in Wisconsin are growing up in poverty. Poverty is at its highest level in 30 years. And so Senator Luther Olson, who's one of my Republican colleagues, as well as Representative Joan Bollwig, we got together and created the first Wisconsin's Legislative Children's Caucus to be able to bring together members of both houses, both parties, who are interested in helping to promote the well-being of children in this state.
Now, you've come out in support of raising the minimum wage as well as expanding overtime pay. How do you see these initiatives factoring into the economic development of the 24th District?
What we've been hearing out in the political discourse, not only in the elections here in Wisconsin, but also nationally, is the fact that so many middle-class families and workers are struggling. And indeed, Wisconsin is the number one state in the nation to have people falling out of the middle class because they're having a much harder time making ends meet with their paychecks. And we have seen where wages have been eroded, costs of food and housing and transportation have all been increasing, but you know, people's paychecks aren't. And when you add in student loan debt as well as the cost of childcare and other burdens that so many families are facing, it is really troubling, and that's why I have been a proponent of gradually increasing the minimum wage so that people are actually paid fairly for their work, as well as updating our overtime laws. I believe that if you put in a hard day's work, you should be paid fairly.
And how would you balance that with the needs of the small business owner who would say, that's well and good, but how can I survive in my small business if I need to pay my employees more? How do you balance that, and how do you address that to the small business owner?
Sure. I think that is an important point and why any minimum wage increase would be gradual. But the fact is that Henry Ford had it right so many years ago when he said his principle of his business was to pay his workers enough to buy his product. And I think that if we raise the minimum wage so that it's actually a living wage, that people's hard work and labor is honored and they are paid fairly, they're going to go out, they're going to buy more products, they're going to buy more services, and that will lift everyone's boats in the community, not only workers, but local businesses as well.
Senator DeLossa, you did co-author the Higher Ed Lower Debt Bill to help mm-hmm. ease the burden of student debt. Your opponent, Patrick Teston, has proposed a plan to revamp the public higher education by limiting the number of general education credits, link tuition to the Consumer Price Index, also offering refinancing options for tuition debt, and cutting administrative staff by 15% over 5 years, among other things. Tell us about how your higher ed lower debt bill itself, you know, what it is and what you're proposing and where it differs from your opponent's plan.
Sure. Well, higher ed lower debt would allow student loan debt borrowers to go and refinance their student loans, just like you can a home mortgage or an automobile loan. And so that it would help to save individuals hundreds, if not thousands of dollars every year based on the size of their student loans. We would also allow, just like we have for mortgage interest, people to be able to take their student loan interest off of their income taxes. But you also have to remember that Governor Walker, as well as the Republicans in the legislature, have made drastic cuts to our education system at the higher level. It amounts to about $1 billion. And in fact, for UWSP, if those trends continue, because they're only receiving about 13% of their funding from the state of Wisconsin, if the current budget trends continue, in 9 years, UWSP will receive zero state funding. So my opponent can talk about reducing administrative positions and things like that. That's already been done. What we have been seeing is that it's taking longer for students to get through the classes that they need to graduate. So that means they're in school a semester or two longer, which adds to their student debt and their costs, and it also keeps them out of the labor force longer. So I believe and have advocated for increasing funding for our UW system and our technical colleges, as well as helping individuals who have student loan debt to be able to refinance. It will save these individuals as well as their families hundreds and potentially thousands of dollars every year.
Senator DeLossa, we are anticipating the DNR releasing its draft environmental impact statement this week, any day now, for the proposed Golden Sands Dairy in the Sound of Saratoga. This project includes 33 high-capacity wells, and a tentative public hearing is planned for the end of October. It goes without saying the issue of groundwater is a hot-button issue for the 24th District. Due to the proposed CAFOs and high-capacity wells connecting to the depleted local rivers and streams, and in some cases in the state are linked to contaminated drinking water. What are you and your colleagues doing to create policy on this issue?
Sure. And unfortunately, in the legislature, the policy has been really one-sided, where only one half of the stakeholder groups have been invited to sit at the table, and so the solution has been really one-sided. So what I have advocated for is that we build off of the Little Plover River study and the optimization model that has now been a result of it. They've developed the optimization model so we understand how groundwater flows and the impact that high-capacity wells or the type of crops or runoff and drainage ditches have on the local ecosystem, at, the surface water as well as the groundwater. So we need to be able to build off the science, understand what's happening with the groundwater, how it impacts surface water, and bring all of the stakeholders to the table. And I do think that the Attorney General's opinion saying that the DNR cannot enforce cumulative impact is going to make coming up with a solution that much harder.
You've been an advocate for many years for veterans when it comes to their education, which we just talked about, and their care. The Veterans Affairs Medical Facility in Tomah was found to have a systematic failure that's undergoing a lawsuit, and some of their top administrators have been let go. You've called for an audit of the state veterans home at King, joined by Senator Luther Olson. What needs to happen to ensure our veterans get quality care?
Well, one is I'm happy that the audit is now going forward by the Legislative Audit Bureau. I'm really disappointed, though, that a year after my original request went in, it was last October, that finally the Joint Legislative Audit Committee got around to it. But now that it's moving forward, I want to make sure that our veterans are getting the best quality health care that we can give them. And I don't believe that's happening at the King Veterans Home. And as we've seen in some of the stories, the investigative stories that have been coming out in the Cap Times, we know that is not happening. And so I've also asked for because King receives so much federal money, the majority of their money comes from the federal government through Medicaid, Medicare, as well as veterans benefits, that the federal government also come in and look to see what's happening at King, solving the chronic staff shortage that's there, to making sure that medical equipment is up to date, that people actually have functioning hospital beds and wheelchairs, and to fix the plumbing system. The yellow water that people are expected to drink and bathe in, and it's also has been found to be well over the lead levels that are considered safe. So there are a lot of problems at King. That's why I'm happy that we're moving forward with this audit. I'm hoping that the federal government will also come in and audit, and that we are able to make sure that veterans are getting the high quality of care that they deserve.
According to a U.S. Department of Transportation report, Wisconsin roads are rated third worst in the nation. 71% of our road conditions are being rated poor or mediocre. Wisconsin has borrowed billions of dollars to maintain our roadways. Our governor recently released his transportation budget, which did not raise taxes or fees and delay current construction projects in Wisconsin. Even Wausau and Marathon County are considering a wheel tax to deal with the infrastructure issue. Senator, where do we begin to find a long-term solution to our roads?
Well, I believe that we begin by looking at the problem that is staring us square in the face. I think investing in our infrastructure helps to create good-paying, family-supporting jobs, as well as it provides the needed infrastructure that businesses rely on every day to move their products to market. So what I believe the governor is doing with this latest transportation budget proposal is really kicking the can down a pothole-filled road, because it really doesn't offer any solutions. I believe what we need to do is pull the transportation budget out of the rest of the budget and deal with it separately, because that way we can have both Republicans and Democrats be able to sit down at the table, look at our transportation infrastructure needs, and come up with a responsible solution. Either that, or people are just going to have to say that, you know, they are going to lower their standards when it comes to the quality of roads, put up with more potholes, put up with more bridges being posted, more townships turning paved roads back into gravel roads, and having their road systems, their roads plowed less when there's a snowstorm. But that will have a definite impact on our economic development, because one of the things that businesses and companies look at when they're looking to expand in an area or looking to move to an area is the quality of the infrastructure.
And the other part of the infrastructure, a major part, is broadband. The 24th is largely, almost entirely rural. And what steps are you taking and your colleagues taking to ensure that broadband stays on the top as a top priority for the district and the state?
Well, it is really important. And when you look across the border to Minnesota, they've invested $30 million, I believe, in one budget for broadband expansion in that state. And when you look at the budget that was just passed here in Wisconsin, it has $6 million spread over 4 years. And we know that extension of broadband can be expensive. And so that's not going to cover very many miles. And it just makes the governor's original decision to turn $23 million of federal money, our tax dollars, away that would have been invested in broadband expansion in our state a few years ago. That much more maddening, because I hear from business owners as well as millennials and others, they need either high-speed internet or broadband to be able to talk with their customers, to provide the services that are necessary to operate their small business. So this is a definite need in rural communities across the state.
Julie Lasso, what would you like the people of the 24th to know about yourself?
Well, I believe that it's important for people to look at what I've done in the state Senate. I've been willing to stand up to the Democratic as well as Republican Party leaders on different issues. If I believe that it's not good for my constituents in the 24th Senate District, which is why I voted against the Bucks deal, which sent millions of dollars to Milwaukee billionaires to build the new Bucks Stadium, I believe at a time when the state is making deep and dramatic cuts to our public education system, we don't have the money to be sending to Milwaukee billionaires to build a new stadium. So I am independent. I'm effective. With just in this last budget, as I mentioned earlier, I was able to get 15 bills passed into law because I work with my Democratic and Republican colleagues to focus in on common sense solutions to the challenges facing our state. And, I travel throughout the district. I'm accessible. You know, I've been independent. I'm effective. And I stand up for the people of my district. And I think that's why we've now seen in the race in the 24th district, these outside dark money groups like Americans for Prosperity, as well as this other Republican entity coming in the state to try to buy this election for my opponent, because they know that I will stand up for the residents of the 24th Senate District, buck my own party when I need to, and I get things done. They want someone who will be a rubber stamp for their agenda, and that is not me.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. I want to thank today's guests, Democrat Senator Julie Lasso and Republican Patrick Teston, candidates for the 24th State Senate District. I also want to thank Jana Rose Schleiss and Eli Frieders for producing the program today. Jana Rose is our on-air producer as well. Glenn Moberg provided our inspiration, and we look forward to having him back. The rebroadcast of today's show will be on 90.9 WHRM tomorrow night at 7. You can also download the program later today at wpr.org/route51. We'll be back next week with incumbent Republican Mary Chaya and her Democratic challenger, Renee Frederick, candidates for the 35th Assembly District. We'll also be joined by WXPR's Ken Thrall. Until then, we're heading out of town.